The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MECU, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome this afternoon. I know y'all are getting ready for the snowstorm coming. Don't be crazy. It'll just be here and gone again. You can enjoy yourselves and stay nice and warm inside with the people you love and just enjoy the white stuff coming down the next 48 hours. But before we get to all that, we're going to get you home safe before it snows. Turn this over to WEA Traffic. When we come back, we'll be talking with Congressman Elijah Cummings. Then we're going to pay homage to the great Bob Marley, whose birthday is this Saturday. Then we'll hear a Scott Horton in his expose on the murders in Guantanamo Bay, at the base there, of course, at the prison. And then Kwame Kwe Arma joins us, who is one of Britain's great playwrights, great Afro-Caribbean British thinker, essayist, and playwright. All that coming up, but first, let's get you home safe. WEA Traffic. Welcome to Your Health Today with Good Samaritan Hospital. We went to Good Samaritan Hospital so I could get my 50,000-mile checkup. We met Nurse Jackie Green, who runs that program, and she tells us a little bit about herself and what's included during this health checkup.
I manage the Good Health Center, which is a health promotion wellness area. I've been at Good Sam for 31 years, and this is a fairly new program that we started back in June and has been very successful. And what we're trying to do is take care of the baby boomers who aren't taking care of themselves. You know, we don't take the time to take care of ourselves overall, right? You know, between work and family and right, every other obligation you can name. So what this program offers is a series of screenings that you usually don't get within a normal physician's office visit. So in other words, today we're going to draw an entire profile of blood. We're going to look at your chemistries, your cholesterol, your thyroid, your prostate. We're going to take your blood pressure, your oxygen levels. We will get your height and weight. We will do a hearing screen, vision screen. We're going to do a breathing test, which is called spirometry. We're going to test the blood flow down your legs. And then we're going to take you for a 6-minute walk in the gym. Once I get all those results, I'm going to put them together in a spreadsheet. So you will receive in the mail, hopefully within 10 days, 2 weeks, an entire spreadsheet containing all your results and any recommendations that we make.
Pretty comprehensive.
Yes.
So what are we testing for?
Here we're going to test your blood counts. Mm-hmm. Make sure you're not anemic, you've got good blood counts, good clotting. We're going to test for your blood sugar, lipids, cholesterol profile, chemistries, kidney function, liver function, thyroid, and prostate.
That's amazing. That was painless.
Good. My intent is not to hurt.
Now we're taking my blood pressure, correct? And listening for my pulse.
Your arm a little bit. That's it. When you take a blood pressure, your arm should not be above heart level. And it doesn't keep you that. Pretty healthy. 112 over 70.
That's good.
You could probably sell that. Alrighty, we're going to get your weight.
188.
That's it. 10.3% body fat. That's pretty impressive.
Oh. From there, we moved to a second room where they fed me breakfast and reviewed my complete medical history. With all that information taken into account, Nurse Jackie Green started the next test.
What we're going to do now is we're going to get you on the stretcher. We're going to do a 12-lead EKG.
Okay.
And we're going to test the blood flow to your legs.
Okay. Let's do it.
What we do is place little electrodes around the framing of the heart. And what it sort of does is take a snapshot of the different areas of muscle around the heart. When we look at the waveforms, we can then interpret them to see if there's any irregularity in the heartbeat, any blood flow issues, those kinds of things. Okie dokie.
Yes?
Looks good. We're going to now do the blood flow study to your feet. Okay. So what we do with that is we are going to compare the blood pressure in your arms to the blood pressure in your legs, and that tells us how the blood flow is getting down to your feet. Do you ever experience cold feet, tingling, discomfort?
No.
Very good. What we do is we have a formula and we're going to calculate and give you a number. If the number is above 1.0, then you have a normal blood flow. And yours, we don't even have to do the calculation. Yours is so good. Okay. Right. Now.
What is that? What are you going to do with that?
See if you can hear.
Oh, that's for a hearing test? Mm-hmm.
We're going to put it up to your ear, and you're going to listen to the first three little sounds.
Am I supposed to be hearing like a vibration?
Should be like a...
Yeah, I was hearing the pressure.
Yeah, some people are not quite sure what to listen for either, so... Okay,
that.
So you're good.
And what's interesting about this process is that none of the procedures that you're doing seem like over the top. You know what I'm saying? Like the people who have whole body scans or whatever. These are very simplistic procedures.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Exactly. And yet give you good concrete results.
Join us next time when I finish this amazing procedure, the 50,000-mile checkup with Nurse Jackie Green at Good Samaritan Hospital. You can call 410-GOOD-SAM or visit goodsamisgoodhealth.org for your 50,000-mile checkup.
Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. I want to let you know what our show is about today. We're going to start off this conversation today with Congressman Elijah Cummings, and then we're going to move to a celebration of Bob Marley's life and have, in the next hour, the great Afro-Caribbean-British playwright, thinker, author, actor, Kwame Kwe Arma, whose new play is opening in Center Stage. We'll be joined by him by Scott Horton, who has written the article that has laid open what happened at Guantanamo Bay Detention Center, where three of the detainees, he says in his expose, did not commit suicide but were murdered. All that coming up in the next 2 hours. So stay with us. Right now we are joined by 7th District Congressman Elijah Cummings. And Congressman, welcome. Good to have you with us.
It's good to be with you, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm real good.
So did it close Capitol Hill if it snows?
I don't think so. God willing, I'm going to be here in Washington tomorrow morning. Because, Mark, you know, tomorrow at 8:30, the numbers come out with regard to how many jobs, if any, have been lost over the past month. So we'll be having a hearing in the Joint Economic Committee upon which I sit, and it should be very interesting to know where we stand with regard to jobs and job loss.
Yeah, I do want to ask you about that in a minute, but I want to give you a chance first to talk about what we said you were going to talk about today, which is this the event you have, the prevention workshop.
Yeah, we had scheduled it, Mark, for this Saturday, but with the snow coming, we decided to postpone it until Saturday, February 20th. But it's going to be the same event. Whereby we, and this is the third time that I've done it, whereby we're bringing in 20 lenders who basically cover about 90% of the mortgages that people have here in the state of Maryland. And basically what we're trying to do is get lenders together with borrowers who are maybe in trouble so that they can modify their mortgages. There are a lot of people sitting out there right now listening to us who they may have missed a payment. They can't see how they're going to make a payment in the coming month or two, or they're already in foreclosure. And what we are able to do, we've been able to do it quite a bit. I'd say for every three people that come to these events, we're able to help at least two. And what we're able to do is help them get their loans modified, which is a big deal, and keep them in their houses, and in some instances the modifications can be I've seen them range anywhere from $200 or $300 per month to $1,100 or $1,200 per month, depending on how much the mortgage was. So again, we bring the lenders in, we bring the borrowers in. And they sit down at a table, and they literally work out a modification.
So what do people have to do to participate in this?
First of all, on February 20th, they just need to call it. First of all, they need to call our office at 410-685-9199, 410-685-9199, and register to come. And then we'll provide them with certain information. We'll get certain information from them and then they just have to show up on the 20th, and we'll set up appointments for them with their lenders, because that's why we want them to call in early to pre-register and set up those appointments with them. And they need to come in, bring copies of any bank statements, any kind of their last two income tax returns. We need two copies of each of these things. We need two copies of anything that would show that they have a hardship, such as a medical bill or and we need a list of their monthly expenses to show that it's almost impossible or very difficult for them to make their payments. But if they call my office, and there are people standing by right now to take their calls at 410-685-9199, we will either fax them or email them a copy of all the documents they need to bring. But it's well worth their time. It's from 9 to 3 on February 20th. Again, it was scheduled for this Saturday, but because of the inclement weather that's coming up, we decided that it was probably better that we postpone it to the 20th. Woodlawn High School, across the street from the Social Security Administration.
In Baltimore County.
Yes.
410-319-8888. Congressman Elijah Cummings is with us, talking about this event he holds every year, the Foreclosure Prevention Workshop. Will be held Saturday, February the 20th, 2010. As he said, call his office at 410-685-9199. But call us here now at 410-893-199 to join in this conversation, to join us here to talk to Congressman Elijah Cummings about anything that really you can talk about, the foreclosure issues, you can talk about other issues that are facing this country or facing you in the community, and become part of this conversation. And let me just ask you, this is important what you're doing, but what about the battle in Congress to do something about foreclosures nationally? I mean, you're doing what you can here to convince banks to come in and do what's right to take care of people and to take care of and help people kind of survive where they are. But something larger has to be done if we're going to take care of this entire nation. And
no doubt about it. First of all, the president came up with some programs to try to help folks. But what we discovered was that we were not getting the cooperation from the banks, for one thing. And a lot of times when people would call Mark, would call the banks, they could not get anybody on the phone. And so we had some pretty decent programs to help people, but from when it came to making them work, there was just not the pressure coming from the president and the Congress, nor was there a willingness on the bank's part, in many instances, to do what was right. And so there was another problem, and that is that, you know, it's one thing to modify a loan where you may have a reduction of income. It's another thing to try to modify a loan where there is no income. In other words, we are finding more and more people who have lost, maybe it's a single mother at a household who lost her job, or maybe it's somebody who has maybe a couple. We've seen couples that both people lost their jobs. And so what I've done, there's legislation that we've had passed in the House, but the Senate hasn't moved on it yet, which was my legislation, which basically establishes a $3 billion emergency loan fund to help people supplement their mortgage payments. And, you know, in other words, they can get these short-term loans each month for 18 months at 3% interest. And then after that 18 months, they would pay it back. But this is specifically to help them pay their mortgages. And it's like a revolving loan program. Now, that's already passed the House. And this is specifically for people who may have lost their jobs and have no income except maybe the unemployment check. So, and we're trying to, and I've talked to Geithner, Secretary Geithner, our Treasury Secretary. As a matter of fact, I met with him and Bernanke one-on-one meetings, and they're talking about working out some things where they put a moratorium on foreclosures to hopefully for this in an effort to allow people allow the economy to come back so that people will be able to get back to work and be able to afford their houses. But yeah, clearly, we have done a lot for Wall Street, but we've got to get these banks to help us out. One of the things that we were able to get through the House was what's called a cram down provision, which means that the bankruptcy courts would be able to modify a mortgage. But when it got over to the Senate, they did not take, as a matter of fact, they voted on it and voted it down. So, we continue to fight, Mark. And I do believe that Geithner and Bernanke and others, and certainly the president, are going to try to work with us to find some better solutions. So I'm just using any means necessary right now to keep people in their houses.
And you also there's a bill that you and Congressman Maurice Hinchey, is it?
Yeah.
From New York, are putting forth to extend this tax credit for first time homebuyers.
That's exactly right. They were trying to cut that out, and what we're saying is, look, let's keep that going because we've got a lot of people who want to buy houses. There are people who there are a lot of houses that are becoming available, sadly, because of foreclosure. The last thing we need to do is to be cutting out something that will help people to, of course, purchase a house. And Mark, you know the rest of the story. If you are able to purchase a house, what that means is that, we're going to probably sell more washing machines, Venetian blinds, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's giving somebody else a job. So when a house is sold, it causes a whole lot of other things to happen. The other thing that happens is that it keeps money flowing into our tax accounts so that the state and local governments can survive and thrive. So, it's a whole lot of benefit to making sure that people are able to purchase a house and able to stay in a house.
So I wonder, I know you and I have a short time today. We look forward to you coming back when you can spend a great deal more time with us to talk about all the issues that we face. And folks, you can join us here for the next few minutes to talk with Congressman Elijah Cummings at 410-319-8888. Part of the reason that Congressman Cummings joined us today was to talk about his annual foreclosure prevention workshop that was to take place this Saturday, February the 6th, at Woodlawn Senior High School, but is being put off till February the 20th because of the snowstorm in the same location. And you can call 410-685-9199 to register for that. That's his office here in Baltimore. So you can take part in that and join us here now at 410-319-8888. In a little bit of time that we have left with the congressman before he has to go. And I said again, we'll have him back to talk about all the other major issues with some of the men and women he serves with in Congress. Just one quick thing before you have to go, Elijah. There was a lot of talk about this, say the union speech, and just your sense of what's happening in Congress now in terms of the ability to really move things ahead. That it just seems that everything is stalemated. The House may pass something, but the Senate is not just going along. Healthcare doesn't seem to be going anywhere. It's been stalled, and that leaves still 45 million people in America without health insurance, and more who pay too much or whose coverage is not as good. And then we have the growing numbers of people in this country unemployed, underemployed, who have stopped looking for work. I mean, what are the people you work with saying about what they're going to do?
One of the sad things, there are a lot of us that, and first of all, I was glad when the president said in the State of the Union that he was going to continue to fight for health insurance. A lot of people said, put it to the side, don't worry about it, it's dead. He doesn't believe it's dead, and I don't believe it's dead. But I got to tell you, what is happening now, when I talk to my colleagues, a lot of them are a little afraid, I guess, because they think that if they vote for something like health care reform, which we badly need, that they may find themselves in trouble in their districts. Believe it or not, there are a lot of people. We got 49 members of our House who come from districts where McCain won during the presidential election. They also feel that the president may not be able to help them as much as he was able to help them in the last election. As you know, there was a tremendous surge with regard to African-American voters and young voters. And all the polling now is showing that a lot of those folks may not be as enthusiastic when it comes to these 2010 elections. And then you have other situations like with Blanche Lincoln, Senator Blanche Lincoln in Arkansas. The word on the street is that first of all, her state is very much against health care reform, and they see no way that she would be able to win under almost any circumstances. So then you've got the Tea Partiers who are doing their thing. So to answer your question, Mark, I think that it's the reason why you see the president coming out here in Baltimore, by the way, last Friday when he addressed the Republican caucus and saying, look, don't worry about your next election. Worry about the people that you represent. And he's saying that for a reason, because he sees and knows that while we may have the Democratic majority in the House and the Senate and the presidency, that it only takes a few of them not to be with us for us not to be able to get something done. Well, keep in mind, we're not getting any Republican votes on almost anything.
On any issues. Congressman, we have to go to break here. I appreciate you being with us. I look forward to you coming back so we can really sit down and talk about these issues at some length together.
Thank you very much, Mark.
And good luck with the Housing Foreclosure Prevention Workshop, by the way, postponed till February the 20th. Call 410-685-9199 to take part in Elijah Cummings' Foreclosure Prevention Workshop. Thank you, Elijah. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Congressman Elijah Cummings. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about Bob Marley, who would be 65 this Saturday. Talk with folks who know his music, talk about his impact on our cultural and social world, and more. So join us for that. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Steiner, and welcome back. Bob Marley would be 65 years old, just a tad older than me, this Saturday. And last night I was sitting up at home, and so much goes on with trying to keep the show afloat and trying to book the shows. I just sat up, and all of a sudden something popped, and I went, wait a minute. Bob Marley's birthday is Saturday. I'm not doing a show about Bob Marley. I got to do something. So I called people this morning. I said, please come on and help us talk about Bob Marley and who he is. And the wildest story is that when I told Valerie this morning we were going to do this show, she said the weirdest thing was in the middle of the room was dark. I'd already gone to sleep. So I put on a T-shirt, and I went to bed and woke up, and this Bob Marley song was in her head. I forget what she said it was. Then she realized when she'd got out of bed and she was, but the Bob Marley song wouldn't leave this. She had been wearing, she went to bed in the dark with a Bob Marley T-shirt on.
Yeah, well, natural mystic.
A natural mystic. That's what we should have played coming in, is natural mystic. Let me introduce Ishell Cole, who's with us, who's singer and keyboardist. Ishell Cole's singer and keyboardist of Stryker's Posse.
Yeah. Greetings.
Natty Rock, who is with us, a singer and saxophone player. Jaw Works, the man who started the band.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
It's good to see you, man.
Not exactly started the band. But
well, you were there.
Been
the
there since.
Been a long, yeah.
Long time.
Long time.
Long time. Yeah. Not as long as I shall.
And in a little bit, Neil Mattai will join us, of course, who was producer and host of the Caribbean Affair. Heard every Saturday here from 1 to 8 p.m. on WEAA, and we'll be doing a special tribute to Bob Marley on that day. And so I just like to just throw this out here. I mean, it just, to me, you know, we talk about seminal figures in the world of culture in a broader sense and how they have these lasting effects. People talk about the Beatles having a lasting effect, blah, blah, blah. But people like Bob Marley, and I was thinking about Tupac Shakur. In a strange way, because in different sets of music, one from the African American world, one from the
Caribbean
world, have had such a profound effect on the consciousness of human beings and young people, and revolutionaries and radicals and people who want to see a better world.
Absolutely.
Aishel?
Yeah. Well, of course, I'm from Jamaica, so
yes.
You know, the music that comes out of Jamaica, and especially, you know, with the respect, the late, great Robert Nesta Marley, because he, to me, was a prophet. He saw things in the music that we would never have imagined, things that he saw that would happen in later years. He wrote about it, whether it was about just everyday life or whether it was about the wars that would take place or, you know, just man and woman, mm-hmm. you know, affairs, you know. So to me, the music from the Caribbean, because it's not just Jamaicans that play reggae music now, but of course, you know, it started in Jamaica. It is a music for the people, music for the world. And it's consciousness, you know, and we can even say there's lots of different types of reggae music coming out of Jamaica. But the hardcore roots rock reggae music that Bob Marley played during his lifetime and that is still being played now and will continue to play forever is the music that people love to listen to, you know.
And what about, I mean, Rock, when you started the work you did and singing, and you could have done many things in your life, but you chose to make your life
Music.
And absolutely. Reggae.
And reggae music, sure.
And reggae music.
Because, well, when I first started playing music, I was playing more like funk. And I enjoyed the funk, enjoyed playing the funk music, but that wasn't where my heart was. My heart was with the music, but maybe not that particular style.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, after my first trip to Jamaica, I was just sold on the reggae music and becoming familiar with Bob Marley, as well as lots of other artists. You know, it just kind of threw me that direction. And once I was there, I knew I was in the right place.
And no matter where you go, whether it's Palestine or Israel or Nepal or Switzerland or Bhutan.
It's universal.
It's universal. You know,
sure.
Reggae is like everywhere. You know, sure. It's a story when I used to go, I go a lot to the Arapaho Reservation in Wyoming. And some of the young brothers on the res there, in their trailer, you walk in, and there's a picture of Tupac, and there's a picture of Bob Marley.
Well,
I
had something to comment on that as well, because just a couple weeks ago, I was down in Panama, in Central America, and their public buses in the town I was in called Colon, they just paint them really elaborately, put fancy sound systems in them, and decorate them, you know, real fancy inside.
We should do that.
And I tell you, it's like every individual driver paints his, like, pimps his ride, you know, basically. And you'd see numerous buses with Bob Marley on it. And then you'd also see buses with Tupac Shakur. It's like, that's, you know, it was part of the Caribbean, but still it's Spanish Caribbean, I guess.
Neil Mattai has just called in to join us for a little bit. He's producer and host, of course, of The Caribbean Affair, one of the most popular programs here on WEAA, every Saturday from 1 to 8 p.m. Neil, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Hey, good to be here, Mark. How are you doing?
I'm very well, man. I'm sorry we did this last minute, but I told the story at the top of the show that I woke last night before I went to bed. It popped in my head, and my God, Saturday is Bob Marley's birthday. I'm not doing anything. So we put it together quickly today.
Right. When I got the call, I was really excited, but sorry I couldn't be in studio to join the panel there. But I'm glad to know that you're talking about Bob Marley.
So tell me what's happening on your show on Saturday. Let's let the folks know about that first.
Okay, well, actually, we start on Friday night at 8 p.m. We've been running this Bob Marley tribute now for a number of years here at the station, and it just keeps extending. Now it's down to 28 hours, I believe, from Friday 8 p.m. to Saturday midnight. And we kick it off at 8 p.m. with a special edition of the Caribbean Exchange with Claudia Lindsay, normally hosts on Saturdays from 2 to 3. It's going to be on Friday at 8 p.m., where we'll be talking about Bob Marley and his contribution and, you know, what he did for reggae music, spreading it around the world, and talk about, you know, some of the music. And the conversation will be about Bob. And then we will be hearing the music from about 9 until midnight on Friday night. Of course, it will be all Bob Marley music at that point with Claudette Lindsay. And we go And we just go through the night playing the music of not only Bob, but the music of the Caribbean as well, you know, straight up until midnight Saturday.
So between 8 o'clock Saturday, Friday night and midnight on Saturday, there's no place else to be but here at WEAA.
There you go.
Absolutely. And you're going to be locked in anyway with the snowstorm.
That's right. So you might as well tune in. Enjoy, right?
So, especially with all the snow on the ground, you know, we want to take you to the Caribbean without leaving, you know?
That's right. So I'm going to go back to where we start off with Aishel. And by the way, in the studio, Neil Matai is Aishel Cole, who is, of course, singer and keyboardist with Stryker's Posse.
Yeah, greetings, Neil.
Yeah, greetings, sister. How you doing?
Harry.
And Natty Rock, singer and saxophone player with Ja Works.
Hey, Neil, what's going on?
Hey, brother, give thanks, man. Ja Works, man.
Yes, yes, bless.
So, and I really want to kind of come back to the place, because one of the things to me that is so powerful about what Bob Marley, his life meant, because people's sometimes lives always mean explode a great deal more when something happens to them. Sadly, but that happens a lot in our existence. But there's something about what he represented to the world that combined the spiritual and the political and the music and the love of life at the same time, kind of telling people to kind of respect what comes down from the bottom up. He was able to do that in a way, Aishel.
He was able to do it better than no one else that I know. I mean, he's the best. I mean, in times of need, Bob was able to tell you, you know, don't worry. You know, when things were going the wrong way, he told you don't worry about a thing because everything's going to be all right. You know?
Sure.
I mean, he was able to console you. The music is so soothing. Reggae music is soothing. But Bob took it the way he brought it to the people. Whether it was about talking about what the world is doing that's wrong, you know, blasting off in spaceships and, you know, just love, peace, and unity. That's what he was all about, and trying to educate the world that, hey, we can live together as one, whether you're black, white, brown, African, American, Jamaican, Caribbean, it doesn't matter. He wanted to bring the message of one love, peace, and unity to all the people in the world.
And you got to remember that Bob was he was pretty much the first person from the third world who made it internationally, became a world superstar.
Yes.
So his perspective was a lot different than the people, you know, coming from America and from Europe as well.
We're not going anywhere, Brian. It's just our engineer's just playing some music. We can keep Bob's soul under us and his sound as we talk a bit about him. So he's there and we're talking about Bob Marley. Neil, would you want to pick up on that thought?
Excuse me?
I said, would you pick up on that thought?
Okay, I was having a little problem hearing you here because I was driving here. I didn't catch all of it.
Okay, basically, all the years of your covering music, coming from the Caribbean as well, and covering the music of the Caribbean and the culture of the Caribbean, and how Bob Marley seemed to sew together the spiritual and the cultural and the political in a way that most other musicians couldn't, but he kind of spread that out. People are doing it now, but he was like the root of that, it seemed to me.
Yes, Bob had definitely had a universal message and a very universal sound. It's at the time that he came about, and since then, maybe, you know, others have tried, but no one really was able to put all of those things together and, you know, and send the message out. Sure. We have great messengers, folks that put the message in the music, but none were able to really do it the way, you know, Bob presented it, you know. And he was special in his delivery, you know, his whole mannerism, you know, everything about what he did, you know, with the music, you know, it holds a special special place. And, you know, when you first listen to his music, man, you know, you just captivated by the lyrics and the calmness of the music as well, you know.
Well, that you hit something here with kind of the calmness of the music. There's something about the reggae sound and about especially
it's very soothing,
right?
Yeah. Very soothing. I mean, as a musician, and when I play and rock and you know, say the same, I'm sure. Whenever you play out, it's as if people want to hear Bob Marley music. I mean, redemption song. It's something about those songs, the lyrical content of those songs. It just, you know, calms you. You know, you listen to that, you're at home or wherever you are. It's like, it's music for the soul, you know. And as Neil said, he was one of the only ones to put it in the perspective that he did. You know, it made you cry. It made you laugh. You know, it made you just think about love all the time, you know. So, I mean, how else can I describe it?
Right. You know? No. It did. I mean, but I think that, I mean, a part of the music ska that reggae grew from, but also grew from the Rastafarian spiritual world that kind of sent a message in that from that little tiny, teeny tinier. You know, spiritual group, Rastafarians in Jamaica, how that has also kind of touched the world. I mean, you know, from a little place in the mountains of Jamaica to the rest of the world, the Rastafari spirit has kind of hit the world in a way that who would have expected that?
And it was definitely Bob who took the Rasta message, you know, abroad off of Jamaica, because prior to him, you know, there were probably some pockets, you know, in the States, probably New York in particular, and in England and London, where Rasta was there because they had traveled there from Jamaica. But the word hadn't gotten out as largely as it had until Bob took the music out there. And then, I mean, straight till today, you can be in Europe, you can be in Asia, you can be on the North Pole. And
people see you. Music.
And people want to hear the reggae music. They see you with the dreadlocks. They call you Rasta.
Yeah, man. Or they start singing, "We jamming."
Yeah, man.
I mean, I went to Africa and they didn't know I was from Jamaica. And the first thing they said, "Oh, Bob Marley."
Right.
Believe me, that was Guinea. I went in 2003 and they didn't know I was Jamaican. They saw my dreadlocks and they shouted, "Bob Marley," just like that.
Yes, that's interesting. That's wild.
I've had the same thing happen in Korea, so it's all over the place.
And that's another piece. I was talking to somebody, you know, about the world of dreadlocks, also that Bob Marley has helped kind of explode on the planet, because now, I mean, white kids, Asian kids, all growing dreadlocks everywhere, right? So, but it's also that I think people forget what they mean.
Absolutely. Well,
Go ahead, Neil.
Yes, you know, that's something that, you know, has been lost over the years, it seems like, in some, because, I mean, it's good to see, you know, folks representing, you know, the dreadlocks, but now to me it has taken on a sort of a fashion statement,
right.
You know, and it's not about fashion at all, you know, so, you know, the real Rasta folks, I imagine, you know, will have some issues with, you know, with the way it's been presented today, you know. So somewhere along the line, the message, you know, some of the folks didn't get the message.
But it's true. It's become like people wear Che Guevara T-shirts or whatever. They, you know, it's all
right.
Become part of somebody selling. It's a fad.
Sure.
You know, that people take on. But the idea that people's locks are like the Jewish girls or the antennae to God. It's not like a
sacred.
It's sacred.
Sure.
Yeah, I can remember 30-something years when I first came to this country, and I had my locks, and I was shunned upon. People were like, what is that? They had no clue what it was. And then for me to see 30-something years later, I mean, everyone has dreadlocks. You don't know why they have it, but they have dreadlocks. So it is a fashion statement, as far as I can see in some groups here,
mm-hmm.
You know, which it's sad because some people don't even know where Rastafari started and what it's about. You know, they don't begin to know the true meaning of what it is.
And, you know, honestly, I've also seen that in Jamaica as well. A lot of the younger culture, you know, everybody
will
be wearing dreadlocks. And it's the words of Burning Spear, a popular reggae singer's fashion dread, a young people business.
Yep.
And you see that as well in Jamaica. But as well, you see the real Rasta, you know.
Neil, I went to one of your colleagues has just walked in the studio, and I'm glad he walked in the room. But and I can tell you, yes, I think you can guess from the voice who the man is. Go ahead. Say
Babawabe.
I didn't even say anything. Boy, Neil, I didn't even say anything, man. We're the camera at this planet in here.
We on video camera now, bro.
I have to catch up, you know? Well, first of all, greetings to you, Mark, Aishel, the wicked bass player, Ace, and, of course, Natty Rock. I was listening. I have to tell you that, you know, with all due respect, Harry Belafonte was before Bob Marley, to come out of the Caribbean.
Sure. I just don't know that he was as big.
Harry and Millie Small, some of the first ones.
And Bob didn't really get as big as he is now until after he passed. Because those of us who
I would say in this country.
Well, true, yeah, in this country and even in Jamaica too. Because Bob until he passed was not as large, and even in Jamaica, which Bass and Ace and Ishell can attest to, Bob didn't really get the props until after he passed, you know, and people saw in Jamaica how his influence. And the Rasta message was taken worldwide and accepted.
I mean, especially... go ahead, Neil.
But you had to understand Jamaica, like any other Caribbean island, you know, where Bob came from, you know, and the music that he was making, you know, and that society and that class structure we have in the Caribbean, you know, Bob music and was frowned upon, you know, in Jamaica, you know, because they see it as, you know, this, as they would say, rubbish or that type of language they would use. So that whole class structure in the Caribbean would not, you know, uplift someone like Bob Marley at that time.
Right.
True.
Yeah, definitely. So that's one of the reasons why you find that you know, Bob may not, you know, have been, you know, open, welcoming in certain in society in Jamaica. But as far as the people, you know, down in the ghetto, you know what I mean, he was a hero to them.
True. Yep, Trenchtown.
410-319-8888. You can join us here. You just heard the voice of the man you know, Neil Matai. We've been joined by Papa Wabe, two of the great. Hosts here on WEAA, whose shows I never miss, and who have been welcoming to me at this station deeply. Ishell Cole is with us. Ishell is a singer and keyboardist for Stryker's Posse. And when I
Mighty
called. and when I was looking for folks to come on today, I called Strongheart Saida, my first wife and dear friend. She said, "You got to call Ishell." So we did. And Natty Rock is with us, singer and saxophone player, and Jah Works. 410-319-8888. What you were saying, though, that does say something about where the world has gone. I mean, when he first started in Jamaica singing, I mean, Rastafarians were the outside, completely on, not, they're still on the outside, but really on the outside. Oppressed on the outside.
Very much.
With the kind of light-skinned Afro-English culture controlling Jamaica and a lot of the islands, and Bob coming out of Trenchtown, even though his dad was white, coming out of Trenchtown, he was... I mean, he represented something that was outlaw, rebel to that society, not something accepted.
Well, one has to remember also, Bob was like so many musicians at that time, that there was no such thing as reggae. So it was like, you know, like a lot of the groups that were trying to sing the R&B cover songs in the rock skit steady in the Sky Temple. So, you know, and that's where that came from, you know. And then that was a music that evolved into what we now know as reggae. So Bob and a lot of others were, you know, not just Bob alone, because there were others that did come before Bob. It's just that Bob, you know, took the Rastafari message worldwide, you know. Ace, don't be a stranger to the mic, man, because I know you can add some.
What were we going to say, Ace? You just said something good. What did you say?
Yeah, I was just mentioning that Toots is one that's
exactly.
Toots and the main
Jimmy Cliff, too.
And Toots is still singing.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Going strong.
Yeah. Doing all kinds of work.
Statement.
The man looked good, man. The man looked too good.
He's still doing splits on stage.
There you go.
He's my age. Yeah. Yeah, so if I did a split on the stage, you have to lift me back up.
Right.
but I mean, but didn't they all come up at the same time? Toots and...
Toots are older.
Older than Toots started than before.
Yeah.
So what? Talk a bit about then the real roots of reggae, Aisha.
Well, to ask the real roots of reggae, because, you know, first we had the Mento. Mm-hmm. Then we had the rock steady, and then came the ska. They wanted it a little faster, and then came the reggae beat, because the ska was a little too fast, so they slowed it back down. So if we're to talk about the real roots of where reggae music come from, Bob was part of the picture, but he wasn't all that did it at the time. You had, back then you had the Delroy Wilsons, you had Alton Ellis, who has passed recently. Mm-hmm. You had Hortense Ellis, which
Desmond Decker
and the Aces,
right.
You
Justin Hines,
Horace
John
Andy,
Holt,
right.
John Holt, Ken Booth. I mean, you have a slew of artists in that era.
Right. Yeah,
Jimmy Cliff. Yeah. Can't forget Jimmy.
You can't forget Jimmy Cliff. Right. No. He made the movie that caught the world.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. How did they come?
How did they come?
And that was, remember, that was right around the time, but still Bob wasn't really on top at that time, that the Harder They Come came out.
Yep.
But it's almost like what we were talking about before, people wearing dreads now is kind of a fashion statement. It's a, you know,
long time.
You know, that, but a lot of stuff that happened then that was, to many, radical, revolutionary, and outlaw, whether it was spiritual or political, has been kind of consumed by the consumerist gods of culture in the West, saying now we can take this and make money on it.
Oh, yeah.
As opposed to where it really came from.
Well, a similar thing, once upon a time in America, it was all right to wear the afro. That was a statement as well, you know. So, you know, and even with the dreadlocks, being a little deeper in terms of the spirituality, but the same kind of, let's capitalize on this.
Exactly.
This style and fashion right now.
We can make money.
Sure. Because see, once upon a time in Naughty Rock, Ishell, and Ace Knows, once upon a time, and in Neo 2, once upon a time, you can tell a Rasta brethren or sister from across the street or room, you know. And, but nowadays, you know, somebody wearing dreadlocks and you hail them, or you just already know ain't no spirituality
right.
with that, you know. And that's no diss, it's just the truth.
So, I mean, for listeners who don't know that, who don't really get that, because they're stupid or ignorant, because people just don't understand it or know it, talk about what you said and what Neil and Papa Nadi and Ishell about what the spiritual side means.
Well, Rastafari is a way of life, first and foremost.
True.
You have to know yourself, know your true identity before you can know of what Rastafari is. Of course, it originated in Jamaica, and a lot of people don't know what it's about. So therefore, I'll quote a song that I heard recently. You know, when you see a lot, whether Jamaicans or Americans, people with dreadlocks, they have the dreadlocks so they can make money. They're not going to lock their hair so that they can sell a CD. You know, these are for the art entertainers or get on the television, whatever the case is. So, you know, the Rastafari religion is really deeply rooted, and it goes with His Imperial Majesty Haile Selassie, who is the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords and the conquering lion of the tribe of Judah. So the Rastafarians out of Jamaica, and as Papa Wabi said earlier, Rastafarians are everywhere. Some are real Rastafarians and some are, if you want to call it, imposters because of the fashion statement. But the true Rastaman, I grew up in a Rastafarian home. My father was and still is a Rastaman. And some of the teachings that I received when I was growing up are teachings based on the Bible, teachings based on the way of life, how you're supposed to carry yourself as a person, an individual, the liberty, how you live, you know. And it's all about love, peace, and unity. When you see the people that have dreadlocks today, in today's environment, whether they're Jamaicans or not, some of them carry a lot of baggage where it's all about fame, and trying to be known for the wrong things. So, you know, if I must say, it is a way of life, and it have a lot of serious things that you have to follow. And if you're not doing that, then you need not to proclaim to be a Rastafarian.
Well, we can't talk about Rasta.
Very powerful. Thank you, Ishell.
Without mentioning Marcus Garvey as well, because the Rastas who pretty much originated from slave descendants, a tribe called the Maroons in Jamaica. Mm-hmm. One of their early beliefs and points of interest was in the teachings of Marcus Garvey.
Yep.
And I believe the Selassie thing came out of that, because Marcus said to look to Africa.
King that will be crowned.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And in 1930. His Imperial Majesty was crowned.
He came to Jamaica in 1966. Yeah.
And the Maroons, of course, were the one of the first successful rebellions of slaves
Nani
against.
Yeah, Kampong.
Right. Yeah, and remained free.
Yeah.
Yep, still free. They have their own civilization up there in Trelawney.
Right.
They have their own celebrations, for Christmas, for Independence, you name it. They do it every year.
And they actually put Nanny on the $100 bill in Jamaica.
There, there you go.
Let's try to get some calls in here. I want to make sure before we end that...
$500 bill.
$500 bill.
Yes.
Before we end, we make sure that everybody knows what Neil and Papa are doing on their shows coming up. 410-319-8888. Michelle, you're on the air.
Yes, hi.
Hi, Michelle.
I have a question. I'm fine. How are you? I have a question about the whole Rastafarian hairstyle. I don't have the hairstyle. However, I'm a professional.
Well, let me cut you real quick. It's not a hairstyle.
Right.
Oh, so I guess listen to my question and then make your comment, because this is a pet peeve of mine. I've heard this type of discussion before, and I don't understand where the resentment or the dislike of other people wearing their hair in that hairstyle, because of the people that I know who wear their hair in that hairstyle don't proclaim themselves to be Rastafarians, don't want to be Rastafarians. They take it as a, you know, ethnic, natural hairstyle, right, that they don't have to put chemicals in their hair, and they use this style. But it seems like a lot of Rastafarians or Jamaicans problem with other people using that style. I
all right, Michelle, I'm only interrupting because we only have a couple minutes left. We have to go to break.
It's
so
not a dislike of folk who is not even that. It's just an acknowledgement. And it's a covenant that one chooses to wear. If you want to wear your hair naturally, that's you know, nobody here said anything about that. It's just a sense of spirituality that comes within the Rastafari liberty, that one is able to recognize one. And folk do wear the hairstyle and adopt some of the styles, but that's just a part of the culture that people choose to identify themselves with.
Before we have to go to break, Neil and then Papa, tell us real fast what you're all doing your shows. Neil Matai.
Okay, we $28 to kick it off on Friday, 8 p.m., go up until midnight. We have a number of top DJs coming through, holding down shifts. Baba Wari, of course, is going to be in there as well, doing his thing. So 8 o'clock Friday, we kick it off, and we go until midnight Saturday night.
Papa Wabe.
And as Neil said, I'll come in from 10 a.m. We're going to 2. I'm going to have as a special guest, good friend, author, and colleague over at XM, Dermot Hussey, who co-wrote a book with Malika Lee Whitney about Bob Marley.
Great book.
And, yeah, so we'll have Dermot on as a special guest. Aishel and Ace, if they want to come forward and pick up this reasoning with Nati. And, and for the sister who called, I want you to tune in at 10 a.m. And we're going to open up the lines and we have more reasoning, you know? So, Mark, you started something, brother.
All right, Nati Rock, good to see you, my brother.
Yes, good to see you, Mark. And I got to say happy birthday to my mom before I get off the
air. Oh, please do. Yeah, Give it to me, too. Give a hug for me, too.
Happy birthday, Mom. And come see Jah Works this Saturday down at the Fieldhouse in Canton.
I shall call Strikers Posse.
Well, blessed love, and remember that 13th floor on the 19th of February, check out the Strikers Posse, and please support the place.
All right.
Give
we'll
thanks, Mark.
Papa Wabi, thank you for coming, man. Yeah, good to have you here, Ace.
Nice.
I listen to you play. We have to take a short break. We'll remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Stop by one of its 7 branches or go to mecu.com for more information. When we come back, we'll be joined by Scott Horton to talk about the murders that took place at Guantanamo. The people are saying a cover-up as suicides. And then we'll talk to the great Kwame Kwe Arma, one of the great playwrights out of Britain, Afro-Caribbean roots. He'll be with us as well. Stay with us. We'll be back.
Now this is the time.